The Fan on Demand.
Stroman and the Jays one hit the Red Sox.
The 1-2 swung on and missed. Marcus Stroman struck out Brock Holt three times today. He has not allowed a hit through six innings.
You're listening to Brady and Walker on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
801, good morning. Brady and Walker on your Friday. I'm Andrew Walker. Eric Smith, we take you up until the Jeff Blair Show at 9. That'll be hosted by George Russick and Jeff Sammet today. Jeff Blair is in the building, or at least he will be. He'll be in for Baseball Central and Primetime Sports, sitting in for Bob McCown. Blue Jays and Yankees at 7 o'clock tonight. What a day it was at the ballpark yesterday. Afternoon baseball, nothing better. The Boston Red Sox in town, roof open, sunny day, and Marcus Stroman takes a no-hitter into the seventh. He was a big topic on the show yesterday. We both said, if you want this killer instinct type of game against the Red Sox, a chance to take three or four, bury them in the standings, this is the perfect bulldog guy to have on the mound. And he completely proved us right yesterday. His ERA as a starter now is down to 2.21 in 10 starts. That's lower than Masahiro Tanaka. It's lower than Mark Burley, who's been terrific. Marcus Stroman. And half you dummies want to trade him for Chase Headley over the last few weeks. Marcus Stroman might be your ace right now. Let me ask you. You have one game next week to make the playoffs, we'll say, Eric. Do you go with Stroman or the guy that's done it for 15 years in Mark Burley?
I might be handing the ball to Stroman.
Why?
Because here's my mentality. He's been their best pitcher over the last 2 months. Burley's been good. A lot of those no decisions, he pitched well in. Burley's been good still. But Stroman's been the best. And I don't know if the early season struggles apply or not, but if, in theory, Burley were to struggle and I wanted to go to the pen and I wasn't going to a reliever and I thought about bringing in a Stroman, I don't know if I want Stroman out of the pen. But I would trust Mark Burley to come in and give me an inning, three innings, if Stroman doesn't get off to a good start and I make a quick exit early and go to Burley. That would be my mentality. I think I trust Stroman enough based on what I've seen. But if in theory he struggles and were to have issues, I have no problem going to Burley. I don't know if I want to bring Stroman as a rookie out of the pen if I'm now in a comeback type situation.
I want to get your calls to this. 416-870-0590. Star 590 on your cell phone or toll free 888-666-0590. If it comes down to a situation like that, And maybe, who knows, maybe we're talking about game one of a playoff series. I'm not sure. I love Mark Burley's experience. And he is a guy that, I think we know what Burley is. He works quickly. He does pitch to contact, right? He's going to give up his base hits. He's been there before. He does have a couple of no-hitters under his resume. But if there's one guy that you could say on any given day, you might not be able to touch his stuff, that guy's Marcus Stroman.
I guess we have to wait and see what happens through August and September if teams even begin to figure him out, because it seems like more often than not, teams are having their issues with this guy big time. You can't deny the success that he's had so far. And, I mean, he completely baffled even the best of the best yesterday for Boston. He was, even put the one-hitter aside, the shutout aside, the fact that they weren't even getting the ball out of the infield, they couldn't, figure him out, what he was coming with, how to make contact with it. It was just, he had the World Series champs completely perplexed all afternoon.
Who would be your starter if you needed to win a game tomorrow? Marcus Stroman or Mark Burley? Who has turned into this team's ace instead of, really, R.A. Dickey, who I think hasn't been that bad this year, but is clearly at this point your number three? 416-870-0590, star 590 on your cell phone. Jays go into New York tonight, and they've lost 16, count them, 16 in a row at Yankee Stadium. I think we said, I guess it would be about a month ago when they went into New York and got swept. It was one of the lower points of this up-and-down season. And I think we said at the time that there's a lot that can happen the rest of the year, but given that you know the Yankees are going to battle and be in the mix, and they still are, today they're dead tied. The winner of tonight will occupy sole possession of that second wild card spot. if they were going to make the playoffs, it wasn't going to be without finding a way to win a couple of games at Yankee Stadium. I think they have 7 games left there this season. You can't go 0-7 the rest of the way.
No, to me, you've got to at least get 3. I mean, even if you're below 500 in those 7 games, you get 3 of 4.
Hell, get one. They've lost 16 in a row. Yeah, but find a way to win one.
I want more. I'm greedy. At this point, I'm greedy. I want to see them get at least 3 of those, because I think if it continues down this path, you're going to have to start worrying about that head-to-head record. You're going to have to start worrying about the division record. You're going to have to start worrying about those games having double meaning because of where the Yankees are. I think we all figured, no matter what the Jays' struggles were at Yankee Stadium, you're not going to have to worry about the Yankees for that long. They're going to drop off at some point. The pitching is not that good, and the pitching has been good even with injuries to their best 2 pitchers. The hitting's not that good. They're old. They're kind of washed up. It's going to be the swan song for Jeter. That'll be enough for the Yankees.
Oh, but they have they have Chase Headley, and we would have traded Aaron Sanchez for him a week ago.
You know, the one thing with the Yankees, though, as much as I know you're saying that tongue-in-cheek, they didn't give up a whole lot in any of their trades. And now, it's not like they're necessarily acquiring guys that are superstar talent at this point, but they didn't really have to give up a ton for some guys that I think are going to have an impact, and clearly a couple guys already have on their lineup.
Big game tomorrow. Who would you start if you needed to win it? Mark Burley or Marcus Stroman? Alex in Toronto tweets in at Fan590Walker, at Eric_Smith. He says, the veteran, you know he can deal with that pressure. And I don't disagree. I mean, you would start Stroman, and sitting here today, I can't tell you who I would start. I don't know. Stroman is 10 starts in, and his ERA is 2.21 as a starter. It's ridiculous.
Would it make a difference to you if it was a 1-game win and in, win you're out? If it was the wild card play-in game, would that make a difference versus you're in already as the division winner? It's a 7-game series. Who's game one? Is there a difference there?
No. Well, I mean, obviously the stakes are higher if it's
the wild card. Are you trying to set the tone with a game one win to establish what might come in the series, or do you want to risk putting the rookie on the mound in game 2 or 3 when you could be down already by 1 or 2?
Unless there's something funky with, like, home road splits. If it's game one of a series, I mean, you're starting your best guy so you can get him as many times in the series as you can.
Who's your best guy?
I think it's the same thing.
So is Stroman your best guy?
Put it this way. Stroman is your best guy. But Mark Burley's that veteran.
And he's been pretty damn good, even though he might not be your best.
Yeah. And I think if it comes down to it, I think, what would John Gibbons do? I think you still go with experience. Or is R.A. Dickey in the conversation? R.A. Dickey, and depending where they are, right? Like, let's say that they go to a hitter's ballpark. Let's say that game is against Seattle in Seattle. Let's say it's against the Oakland A's. I don't know, maybe the LA Angels catch Oakland for the end of the year. What about starting R.A. Dickey in Oakland or L.A., where his ERA is like under 2 in his last 10 starts in California? Could he still be in the mix?
And he's clearly been a good pitcher in spite of what some people will try to make you believe. He's had a decent season overall in spite of what some people are telling you.
Worst tweet of the day coming up at 8:12. And yes, it does involve a Marcus Stroman trade, so that's predictable. Update from the Canadian Open. As you look at the leaderboard, this is the problem that a lot of people have with it, is that maybe you didn't catch any of the golf yesterday, so you flip on your app or you know, you go on the website and check it out. And your leaders are Michael Putnam and Tim Petrovic. It doesn't exactly beg you to race to the TV and flip it on for round 2, does it?
No. And I'm actually going to be in Montreal on Sunday. I don't think I'll be racing over to try and catch the final round, no matter who is at the top.
But this is the difference, though, because
there will be a little bit more interest, television-wise and whatnot, if there's a Canadian in the mix.
In this country.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Right? Stateside, no doubt. There's
the way we feel about, I don't know, the Zurich Classic, when the field isn't that great. If there's a couple names at the top, you might pay attention to who wins on Sunday. But generally speaking, you don't. This is how it's perceived south of the border. Nobody wants to watch a tournament where there's no Tiger or no Rory or no Phil or no Bubba or no Ricky Fowler.
Adam Scott.
And Tim Petrovic is leading the way. But we have to get over that, right? This is like, and maybe it's a bad example, this is like the Canadian Football League. It's Canadiana, Just enjoy it for what it is. If Graham Dillett finds a way to win this week, if David Hearn finds a way to win this week, it's still great for Canadian golf. It doesn't lessen the fact, it doesn't lessen the accomplishment of winning a PGA Tour event, and it gets that first one under their belt. And how about Taylor Prendith, the Canadian amateur? A 5-under yesterday, one off the lead. If a Canadian is in the mix on Sunday, it's going to feel like a major in this country. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, nobody in the States is going to care who Tyler Prendith is as far as if he ultimately is still in the mix. But here, it's going to be an absolutely big deal, and it should be. I mean, if you've got a chance to win anything on your home soil in front of hometown, home country fans, I think that's absolutely a big deal. So, you know, that will add a little bit of intrigue to it. I mean, we also have to preface it, I suppose, by it's Thursday. We still got three full rounds to go. So anything could happen at this point. But you look at the top 10, top 15, there are a few recognizable names and real world beaters amongst the mix. So maybe Prendith has that sort of window of opportunity open for him. He tees off in, what, about 45 minutes roughly at 9 o'clock.
David Hearn is the Canadian on the course right now. He's one over, so he's at 2-under on the tournament, trying to make a few inroads into those leaders. And everybody went low yesterday. 8-12, Brady and Walker, let's do your worst tweet of the day.
Brady and Walker's worst tweet of the day.
You know, everything is not an anecdote. You have to discriminate. You choose things that are funny or mildly amusing.
All right, so Eric, no surprise that the opinions today is nobody wants to trade Marcus Stroman and Aaron Sanchez. Nobody thinks like that anymore. Wasn't the case 24 hours ago.
Well, according to Twitter, this was exactly 22 hours ago. So I guess roughly around 6:30 in the morning yesterday, about 6 hours before first pitch for Marcus Stroman. Johnny Adornetto, I'm not entirely sure if I'm saying the name correctly, but Johnny Adornetto, who writes for RantSports.com and eDraft.com, on Twitter 22 hours ago, Jays need to trade Sanchez / Stroman now. What good will they be in the future without powerful lineup they have now, in brackets, when healthy? # Blue Jays.
So basically, let me sum up what he's saying. He doesn't like the Jays' chances in the future. So the way to solve that is to get rid of your good young players now.
Correct.
Makes sense. 8:14, Brady Walker. I'm Andrew Walker. He is Eric Smith. Mike Wilner, I believe, is going to join us coming up in about 10 minutes from now. And as Mike Wilner would say on Twitter, it's a shame the season ended Monday with that 14-1 loss to Boston. Makes the last three wins meaningless.
Back at it. Brady and Walker, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Here he comes, swinging a high fly ball, right field, pretty well hit. Back goes Victorino, he's at the track, he's at the wall, there she goes! A two-run home run for Juan Francisco. The Blue Jays 5, the Red Sox nothing.
Blue Jays lay the boots to the Boston Red Sox yesterday at the Rogers Center. What a beautiful day in the sun, and Marcus Stroman flirts with a no-hitter. Now that is a pretty good day at the ballpark. It's Brady and Walker, 8:22, Jays and Yankees tonight. Coverage begins at 7, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Burley and Kuroda. I'm Andrew Walker, he's Eric Smith, joined by Blue Jays broadcaster Mike Wilner, who I love the way you put it on Twitter. Three straight wins from the Blue Jays, and what a game yesterday. It just means it's a shame the season ended on Monday, wasn't it?
It's really too bad. And yeah,
really too bad.
You know, it's a little over the top. Monday night was a kind of crazy night on Twitter when the Blue Jays lose 14-1, and everyone's kind of rushing to be the first one to talk about how terrible the Blue Jays are and how, you know, you can't, nothing good going to happen with this team. You can't lose a game like this by this much. And, you know, it's not football. And even football, you get blown out once and rebound from it. But, you know, there's a bazillion games in a baseball season. And to lose one of a four-game set doesn't mean anything. And the truth is, even if the Jays had just split this series against the Red Sox, as shorthanded as they were, as they are, as well as the Red Sox have been playing and as poorly as the Blue Jays have been playing, I'd have been totally fine with a split. winning 3 out of 4 is a terrific showing for them.
Mike, especially when you factor in what happened right before the All-Star break, when you talk about that 2-8 to come back,
Yeah. You
lose that first one and Aaron Cebia smacks you in the face and you think, oh God, here we go. They get the next two. They go into the Boston series, blown out, win 3 straight. To go 5-2 at home and start, you know, building that momentum in a sense of erasing the abysmal 2.5 weeks before the break.
Absolutely true. Absolutely. And you know what? It was a... I don't know if it was an imposing homestand because you're facing the two worst teams in Major League Baseball, or at least in the American League, in those 7 games in Texas and Boston. But the Blue Jays had been playing worse than anybody almost in the whole league, and it was a terrible road trip. And you come back off the break, and you still don't have your guys back. I mean, the break was a nice little breather for Jose Reyes and Melky Cabrera, but really... that's it. I mean, it's not like they came back and all of a sudden, hey, here's Adam Lind or Edwin Encarnacion or Brett Laurie or even Nolan Reimold. None of these guys. And so you're in exactly the same position as you were before the break, and yet you go out and win 5 out of 7. It was really unexpected, and it had a lot to do with the guy who was pitching yesterday, Marcus Stroman, in this homestand, 14 shutout innings.
Mike Wilner, our guest, want to ask you about Marcus Stroman's pitch count yesterday and how big of an issue that was going to be for John Gibbons if we got into the 8th and 9th inning of that no-no. But watching Stroman yesterday and over the last couple of months, I get it. We can overreact on guys with small sample sizes, and I don't blame fans for ever getting excited. I mean, we're certainly doing it with 2 innings of Aaron Sanchez. We all know that. We did it with Juan Francisco in May. I would say last year we probably did it with Ryan Goins, right? He was anointed the starting second baseman of this club, the future, and then he found himself back in Buffalo this year. But there's something about what Marcus Stroman has done in his 10 starts that makes me think that any and all hype he is getting is completely deserved and completely legit.
Well, but that's because, you know, we did it with Juan Francisco and with a bunch of other guys.
Yeah, but Stroman's different, isn't he?
No,
he's not.
Different than Francisco, for sure. I mean, Juan Francisco was a guy who had kicked around a few times. I mean, I kind of thought, well, maybe, because he's only 26, and maybe he's finally put it together. And those first 3 weeks of Francisco were fantastic, and you know he did awfully well yesterday too. But it was, there were 3 weeks in, and people were calling the post game show and talking to me on Twitter and saying, when will you finally admit that Juan Francisco is the real thing? And I'm like, give the guy 200 at bats. And for Marcus Stroman, it's a little bit different because he comes with a great deal more pedigree than Francisco did. Francisco's already on his 4th major league team at 26 years of age, which is not a good sign. But you know, Stroman has hit the ground running beautifully, and I love him. But is he going to have a 2.20 ERA as a starter? Probably not. There are going to be some bumps in the road. But this is a guy, I think, who is a legit big league starting pitcher, may wind up being able to be a legit top of the rotation big league starting pitcher. He certainly has been that over 10 starts. But, you know, he's... the rookie leader in ERA among starters, better than Masahiro Tanaka. Is that the real Marcus Stroman? There aren't too many of those who come along. So I'm not going to say the jury's out on him. I believe he can pitch and pitch well and be a big piece. This good? I don't know if he's this good.
Mike, admittedly, this is a positive problem. But when you're healthy... might come in the next week or two. Encarnacion's back. Lynn's back. Even Brett Laurie's back. What does the lineup look like?
Well, might come in the next 3-4 days for Encarnacion and Lynn. I mean, they may be back by Sunday, and that would be pretty swell. I don't know if it's as difficult as it seems, because even though this 5 out of 7 is pretty nice, and there's some obvious spots where you can make some moves. I mean, Francisco, I expected to be gone when Encarnacion and Lind came back. But I wonder now, because they don't seem so terribly enamored with Dan Johnson, I wonder which of those two guys is going to go. But one of those two guys is going to go, I would think, when Encarnacion and Lind come back. And the other one, you've got an extra infielder with Kawasaki and Goins, but you kind of still need them both before Brett Laurie, until Brett Laurie's back. But I think one of them probably goes when Brett Laurie comes back. With Encarnacion and Lind, I think it'll be Johnson or Francisco and a pitcher, because they're running with eight in the bullpen right now. So it might be Esmil Rogers who goes when those two come back. And when Laurie comes back, one of Goins and Kawasaki will go.
And one more from me, Mike, and that is Yankee Stadium. It's been 16 straight. It sucked when the Blue Jays went there, whenever it was, a month and a half ago, and lost three straight to the Yankees. I think we said at the time that the Yankees aren't going anywhere. If they're going to find a way to get into the playoffs this year, it's not going to be with going over the rest of the way at Yankee Stadium. How do they find a way to get over these demons, or whatever you call it, in that ballpark?
You just have to beat them. You know, I don't think it's demons, because it's baseball, right? It's and 16 games against a division rival on the road isn't that long. It's the last series of 2012.
God, that's a lot of games to not run into a win.
They were terrible last year. I mean, the Blue Jays were a terrible team last year. You're going to luck into a win every once in a while, but basically, when you talk about 16 games, it's one series on either side of a horrible year last year. And last year, I think, when they went 0-10 at Yankee Stadium, I believe, I'm not 100% sure on this, that they had the lead in eight of those 10 games, and they wound up losing them all. It was just horrifying what they did at Yankee Stadium last year. But I really do think that that's all it is. And I don't know if they go in and win tonight. I mean, Mark Burley has not been good against the Yankees in his career, but these aren't exactly the same Yankees that he's faced over his whole career. But look, the truth of the matter is, and I don't know how it's happening, the Yankees are a bad team, and I don't know how they've managed to stay tied with the Blue Jays to this point. I mean, they've gotten a great effort out of Brandon McCarthy since they traded for him, but their starting rotation is terrible. Their offense is not very good. The bullpen is okay. The defense is not especially good beyond Brett Gardner and Jacoby Ellsbury. It's a bad team, and it was a bad team last year, too, in New York, and honestly, the only difference between the Jays and Yankees last year was that the Jays couldn't win a game in the Bronx. If they had gone 5-5 instead of 0-10 at Yankee Stadium last year, the Blue Jays and Yankees would have finished a game away, apart from each other in the standings. I don't know what it is. I don't know how it's happening, or the Yankee magic or whatever, but I certainly don't expect the Blue Jays to get swept this weekend, and I don't expect them to get swept when they go to Yankee Stadium in September.
It's a big series. We'll be listening. Just a shame the year's over, because otherwise it would be fun to watch.
Yeah, it really is too bad.
All right, thanks, Mike.
All right, guys.
That's Mike Wilner at Wilnerness590 on Twitter. He will have Jays talk after this one. 7 o'clock, Jays and Yankees tonight. Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Andrew Wiggins, Eric, signs in Cleveland yesterday. It's a four-year deal. It's kind of the standard rookie deal, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with it, though, comes a clause. Andrew Wiggins has to be a Cleveland Cavalier for the next 30 days at least. What does this do to the whole impact of the Kevin Love trade rumor?
Well, it certainly opens the door for the Timberwolves to hit the market and attempt deals with other teams and potentially freeze out the Cavaliers. So that's one. But in the long run, if such a deal isn't to be had, I think it might actually help pave the way a little bit for a deal to be done with Cleveland one day, simply based on the fact that because he has signed a deal, it's now that you're not just trading Andrew Wiggins' draft rights. You are trading Andrew Wiggins under contract, bound in a sense by that contract and the obligation to it. If you had just traded his rights,
right,
he could have held out with you and not signed a deal and tried to force his way out of town even after making the deal. So it could help things if, of course, Minnesota doesn't go out and actually make a deal with another team like Chicago or somebody else.
Do you still think this is an eventuality that gets done, or do you think Cleveland thinks better of it? Do you think this is maybe something that happens, you know, midway through the season once they can kind of get a grasp of where Bennett and Wiggins really are?
I think from a Cleveland perspective, it's probably not a good thing, because if they even want to make the deal, and that's what we're assuming, but if they want to make the deal and they are that set on Kevin Love, I would imagine getting it done sooner than later is better. For Minnesota, I think it allows them to sit back and maybe, again, play the field a bit, see what's out there. But from their perspective, too, getting it done earlier than later is better as well, because I would not want to get into a point where I'm starting training camp, let alone the season itself, knowing that I've got Kevin Love, who's an unrestricted free agent at the end of the year. And I would imagine that no matter how he plays on the floor, the value will only go down as the season begins, because teams will not want to give up a ton for a potential rent-a-player situation.
Jeff Blair Show coming up at 9 o'clock with Jeff Sambit and George Russick. At 8:42, we'll talk a little Buffalo Bills. What are folks in Buffalo saying about the future of this team? And Sammy Watkins, how's he impressing early on in camp? John Murphy is the Bills radio voice, and he will join us.
Prices like no other, from a club like no other, the Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Brady and Walker continues on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
8:42, Brady and Walker getting into the weekend on your Friday. I'm Andrew Walker. One last segment with Eric Smith this week. It's been a pleasure. An update from the RBC Canadian Open at Royal Montreal. Taylor Pendrith, who fired a 5-under, the Canadian amateur, isn't tee off for another 15, 20 minutes. But Graham Dillette, my boy, 2-under on the day through 3. He's 3-under for the tourney, so he sits 3 shots back. But I don't know. You know what they say about Tim Petrovic? You know, when he gets out in front, he's really tough to catch.
Look out.
He's really tough to catch. Very underrated. No, they don't say about that. It would be great, though, on Sunday if Graham Dillette or David Hearn, who is 1-over today, 2-over on the tourney through 6 today, can be in that mix. And Vijay Singh, he never wins anymore, but he's in the mix. He's 1-under in the day, 2-under on the tourney as well. The Buffalo Bills, which is your team of choice. Now, I'm a Packers guy,
right?
And I feel it's okay for Canadian media to have an NFL team. We're not right in the throes of it. Maybe it's a little different when the NFL eventually comes here. You are a Buffalo Bills guy.
I am. I've been wearing that badge of honor for quite some time.
Honor, if you call it that. Very pleased to have John Murphy, the Buffalo Bills radio voice, join us now on Brady and Walker. Good morning, John. How are you?
Good morning. Eric's only a fan because Jack Armstrong takes him to games for free. That's why Eric loves the team.
That's pretty much it. Yeah, that's pretty much it. How are you, John?
I'm great.
Hey, it made the rounds yesterday and went viral. The Sammy Watkins, I'm going to stumble and then I'm going to get my feet and still snag the ball in the end zone, one-handed catch. How is this kid impressing the first round pick of the Bills?
He's been great. That video, that catch was pretty amazing. Although I have to confess, I didn't get as excited as many people for one reason. It was against air. I mean, there was no defense. It was just a simple passing drill. He slipped and fell, quickly gathered himself and caught the ball with one hand. It was a pretty cool play. He made, I think, a better catch a couple of days earlier. I want to say it was maybe Monday of this week when E.J. Manuel threw a pass into some traffic, and he was looking for Sammy. Sammy was surrounded by 3 defensive backs. The ball got batted up in the air, and it didn't just get batted down. It went up about, I want to say, 15 to 20 feet high, just on a straight line up into the air. So it was a jump ball, and Sammy came down with it. I mean, he had like a 32-inch vertical leap and just came down with the ball in between 3 defenders. To me, that was his catch of the week. But he's been great. He's been, he's going to make EJ better because he's got such a big catching radius. You know, anything thrown near him, he seems to be able to go and get. He's fast enough. He's very quick. A scout was telling me the other day about Sammy, and one of the things they like was what the scouts call short area quickness, which means in a confined space, he can make a few quick steps and get open. And I think he's going to be a big boost to the Buffalo offense, and particularly to E.J. Manuel.
Hey, they gave up a ton to get him. But if he is A.J. Green or whatever, like Bill's brass think he's going to be, it's worth it. Look what A.J. Green does for Andy Dalton, who a lot of people say is not a star in Cincinnati.
I agree. In fact, based on what I've seen in the spring workouts and then this past week, we've been in camp for a week now, I think he's already worth it, whether or not E.J. Manuel pans out as the answer or not, because he looks to be an elite caliber receiver. He's got a great work ethic. You know, he admitted early in the spring workouts that he wasn't as precise on his routes as he needed to be or wanted to be. So he would come in at 6 in the morning during the spring and work out on his own running routes, getting the precise footwork down. And then, you know, you can see, I even seen evidence of it already. I mean, just in the past couple of months, evidence of him really doing a good job and making that a better part of his game. He's got all the tools and I think the right approach to be a superstar in this league.
John, with Watkins there now, how imperative, though, is it that EJ Manuel is the guy? Because can you kind of suffer through another setback of a year or two, a few years of trying to find the guy if EJ Manuel isn't him?
No, I mean, obviously, you know, 14 years without a playoff spot puts everything, you know, accelerated. But they need EJ to be the guy. I'm not quite as down on him as some observers at camp have been this past week. There have been some missed throws, but I also think there's progress, particularly if you watch closely how he gets through his progressions, his reads. He seems to be a little bit quicker getting through his reads now than he was maybe at times last year. Accuracy is going to be something that he continues to work on. You know, the Bills hired a quarterback coach in the offseason, Todd Downing, who worked with Matthew Stafford in Detroit. I think his main focus has been fundamentals in an effort to improve the accuracy. I was talking to Ron Jaworski, the ESPN analyst and former NFL quarterback. He was at camp the other day. I asked him about what he thought of EJ, and he said two things. Accuracy, he said, which can be improved, and he talked about how he had to get better at accuracy and during his days in the late 70s and early 80s. And two, and this is kind of on the coaching staff, giving EJ what he called defined reads, which means don't give him hazy instructions as to where he's going with the ball. Say it's either here or there, here or there. Don't give him a lot of to chew on. And I think if they can do that, EJ will take steps forward. Will he be a Pro Bowl quarterback this year? Probably not. But will he be an effective winning quarterback? I think there's a good chance that could happen sooner rather than later.
Bills radio voice John Murphy, our guest. The report comes out yesterday that the prospective ownership group, including John Bon Jovi, now conducting feasibility studies into Toronto and building a stadium, one site near the waterfront, another in Mississauga. It's the latest step. You know, what's the latest you've heard? What's the latest feeling among those in Buffalo as to how this sorts itself out?
Well, I think people in Buffalo feel pretty good that the Bills are going to stay here, quite frankly. I think the lease that was signed in December of 2012, and in particular the non-relocation agreement that was a companion to that lease, makes it really difficult to move that team. It's impossible for the first 6 years or the next 6 years, and then there's a one-year window and then a couple of years where it's very difficult again. You know, I think the lease makes it difficult to move, and I saw that the reports yesterday. I heard earlier in the week that the Toronto group was not thinking about moving into Toronto. There's so much subterfuge. I mean, who knows? Somebody might have, but I'm just guessing, somebody might have put that report out there yesterday in order to sort of poison the water for the Toronto group. We're coming down to the real critical time here as far as the transfer of the franchise. Next, what's the 29th? Next Tuesday is the date for the bids to be submitted. And there'll probably be a round of bidding and discussion after that. But I think we're in the last, in the next maybe 6 to 8 weeks, we're going to have a pretty clear idea who the next owner of the Bills is going to be. And the Toronto group certainly is financially formidable. But, you know, they're going to have somebody, whoever owns a team, is going to have to decide if they can live with that lease and that non-relocation agreement. And does it make any sense to even countenance moving the team in the face of that lease and non-relocation agreement? I don't think it does.
John, even if Toronto isn't ultimately in the picture, where do things stand from a Buffalo perspective with the stadium that was being proposed on the Buffalo waterfront? Because that sounded like a beautiful and outstanding idea from a location standpoint, and for Canadian fans even, let alone for folks in Buffalo.
Yeah, there is that proposal out there by a private group that has no affiliation with the Bills, so I don't know where that's going to go. Everyone I've talked to that talks about this, and there's not many who talk in an official capacity, but they all say, first things first, and the first thing is ownership or transfer of the ownership of the franchise. Once that's done, a lot of what they're going to do with the stadium, I think, is in the hands of the next owner, right? I mean, he's going to decide, and, you know, the state of New York and Erie County are prepared to enter into discussions about that, and Governor Cuomo has been pretty proactive here in New York State in making sure that if their new stadium is needed, that they're, you know, going to move forward and see what they can do to help finance it and build it. But I think the first order of business is to settle on the ownership situation, which, as I said, could be a couple of months away from being pretty much settled, if not officially approved on. You know, when you come down here, Eric, to the to a game this year, you're going to see a vastly improved Ralph Wilson Stadium with $130 million in improvements to the concourses, to the entrances, to the gates, the seating area. The bowl itself remains the same. So the stadium's going to be viable for at least the next 10 years, I would think. So I think that's part of the good thing about that lease as well. There's nobody's going to have to hold a gun to the head of the government officials here and say, we need a stadium by next year, because Ralph Wilson Stadium is being kind of refurbished right now.
Well, Eric will be there with his Eric Molds jersey on, so you'll see him. He's the only one wearing that one. Thanks, John. We appreciate it.
All right, guys. Good talking with you.
All right, John Thanks, Murphy John. Is the Buffalo Bills radio voice. Yeah, Sammy Watkins impressing in camp right now. Jeff Blair Show coming up at the top of the hour, 9 o'clock. It is Jeff Sammet and Ben Ennis in today. Just an update from the RBC Canadian Open. Yeah, Graham Dillette is 2-under on the day, 3-under overall. Watch out for him. And, of course, Dick Pride is also 3-under.
I think he goes by Dickie.
Right, Dickie Pride. Still at the top is Tim Petrovic. And, Michael Putnam birdie, so he's 7-under. So you can't catch him anymore.
Star-studded leaderboard.
Yeah, star-studded. You know, but, you know, won't if Dillette's there or David Hearn's there on Sunday, it won't matter. Ben Edison, Jeff Samadin. Yesterday at the game, and you made a great point on Twitter.
Oh, thank you.
Now you really thought that even if he gets through that seventh, Marcus Stroman wasn't going to finish that game.
Yeah, and Jeff and I are going to talk about it. We're going to talk to John Morosi coming up after the top of the clock.
Never
and
heard
spend
of him.
A lot. Of, yeah, it's kind of an important dude for Fox Sports. I mean, he threw 115 pitches once this year. He's the youngest Blue Jay since Roy Halladay to do that. That's about the limit. Can you see them really going to 140?
Leave him in.
145?
Throw 200 innings. Leave him in.
I mean, this is not Edwin Jackson. It's not A.J. Burnett.
It's not R.A. Dickey.
This is a guy who's supposed to be the linchpin of your rotation for the next, well, at least the next 6 years.
Until
well,
they trade him for Martin Prado.
Exactly. Yeah. No, and not to say that there's a direct correlation to throwing a lot of pitches and getting hurt, but there's not. I mean, there's a risk there to letting him throw 125 pitches.
I go back and forth because I think as a fan, Eric Smith was there with his dad yesterday.
I was there too. I was in the press. I didn't see either of you guys.
I was by plan, actually.
I was standing in the concourse with Rose on. I'm one of life's big winners. But there was a guy that took his kid there, I'm sure, for the first time yesterday. And 20 years from now, hey, we all want the Jays to make the playoffs. But 20 years from now, barring something spectacular happening in the postseason, you won't be able to tell me the record of this team, but you would remember where you were when Stroman threw his no-hitter.
I've never been to a no-hitter. I've never witnessed one live. I mean, on television, yes, but I've never been at a game and seen a no-hitter. So if anything, do it for the children, guys.
Children.
Do it for the children,
guys. Well, somebody
guys.
Think of the children.
Yes.
There was... a correlation for me because I was actually at the last no-hitter at Rogers Center. I was at Justin Verlander's no-hitter.
You were probably with Greg Brady.
I was not with Greg Brady, but it was kind of a similar situation where I went just by myself on my day off, and I thought,
shocker,
this is history repeating. Yeah, I have no friends, okay? It's not very nice to bring that up, but I thought it was history repeating.
And you'll never forget that, right? There's something special.
Well,
but at the end of the day, John Gibbons doesn't care about dementia. The moment for the kids. Right, he's trying to protect his starter for the rest of the year. 8:54. It's Brady Walker. Thanks for listening. Our thanks to Eric Smith, who's in this week. Jeff Sammet, Ben Ennis, coming up next.